This is the Starting Five, and today on the Starting Five, we welcome a new guest, but is someone that Raptor fans will be familiar with. It is Darren Andrade. You see him on Raptors TV once in a while. You see him on The Grill Room on Sun TV, and he works primarily on Sway Sports. And we welcome him in to talk some Raptors and NBA basketball. Hello, Darren.
James, pleasure to be here.
Okay, before we get into the Raptors, the first thing I want to talk to you, and it involves Chris Bosh a little bit, but what's your take on this whole free agent frenzy and this supposed summit meeting that we're going to have with Bosh, Wade, LeBron James, and who knows who else got an invite to this thing?
Well, I mean, you look at the way the free enzy, the frenzy, well, we should call it the free enzy, but look at the way the free agent market is sort of shaped up into this media frenzy. It's sort of the unofficial lead up to the draft, to the finals, and it's sort of taken a toll on itself just because of the multimedia facets that around everybody is dying to get information, and there's a lot of, you know, resources and sources out there trying to serve that need. But on a more important note, that summit you're talking about, you know, some people have dismissed it as sort of, you know, LeBron James posturing, sort of an ego-driven thing to keep his name in the light. But, you know, I look at it from a totally different standpoint in that, you know, this is a very important time for the NBA. When you consider that the CBA collective bargaining agreement will be on the table in the not-too-distant future, these players, these free agents, have taken upon themselves to sort of wield a big sword to sort of test what kind of power they actually have in the NBA landscape. And if you come out of this summit with these particular free agents, LeBron chief among them, sort of dictating and sort of, you know, pointing at where they're going to go and who's going to team up with who, those kind of decisions go a long way in determining the fate, determining the competitiveness, determining the landscape of the entire league. So as an owner looking forward to CBA talks, you know, and as players that are going to be having to deal with that, it's going to be an interesting tug of war depending on how this summit turns out as to what kind of power the owners want to take back and what kind of power the players are going to be willing to wield beyond the dollar. Because let's face it, this summit is going beyond dollars. All these guys are going to get max contracts when you talk about Wade and LeBron and Bosh. It really is about destiny.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think this could ultimately change the landscape of not just the NBA, but maybe pro sports in a way. And I'm not sure if it's necessarily a good thing for the fans of the sport.
It's a two-sided, double-edged sword in that if you're living in Miami or you're living in L.A. or you're living in New York where a lot of these guys are destined to go or where there's a lot of star power already, you're fine with it. I don't know how much it changed in terms of the bottom line because, let's face it, the teams that make it to the finals and win the finals and garner the better players through free agency are still going to remain the same. That's not going to change too much. If LeBron decides to package him and Wade to a Cleveland or to San Antonio or to Denver, then you're talking about a serious change in sort of culture. But I think the big thing here is that you have a handful of players that feel as though the league has given them, fans have given them, and their dollar signs have given them some power in determining their own path beyond the collective bargaining agreement. And you talk about this reaching out to other sports. Absolutely. With the way that athletes are looked at, athletes are treated, athletes are regarded in today's society, we give them that power. We give Tiger Woods' power. We give LeBron James' power. And to criticize them for wielding it, I think is a little short-sighted. If you have it, you've got to see how far it can take you. And with these players, I think this is really a point in time where they're going to see how far they can push it. And the fact that they're doing it on the eve of what could be one of the most important collective bargaining agreement eras in NBA history really has sort of made a congestion in terms of traffic about all the subplots that'll be going on this summer.
I agree with you, but what does that do for here at home, a city like Toronto, where Toronto has always had its issues with being able to keep players and stuff like that, and now most people believe Chris Bosh is going to be out the door, and here we go again. So if they're successful, isn't this a terrible thing for Toronto as a market?
Well, I don't know if the summit itself is terrible for the for the market, only because what you've just mentioned, in that there's been a steady string of stars that have left this city, Vince Carter, Tracy McGrady, we can name them, and it didn't have anything to do with the free agent summit. You know, there's been various reasons why players have left, chief among them money, but chief among them also, you know, their spotlight, the ego stroking. And so I don't really see this as a flight on Toronto sports any more than it will be on a lot of other cities in the NBA. But it definitely doesn't help. And when you've opened a player like Chris Bosh up to that option, you know, when you're invited to that kind of table that he's been invited to with this summit, you're certainly broadening your options. And, you know, with what he's gone on with through his Twitter, through his social media, and now through close friends and confidants, it wouldn't be a stretch at all. And I can't blame anybody in this city for expecting Chris Bosh to leave. The fact that it might go through this summit and he might find himself in a better place is not really, you know, something that you could say, well, this is the reason he left. If he's going to go, he's going to go. This summit is simply going to funnel him through a process the players have decided is best, and maybe put him to a team and into a position that he might like better. But I don't see this as being the reason why Chris Bosh is leaving. I think you look at the losing. I think you look at his supporting cast. And I think you look at his sort of options in the way of he's always fancied himself to be this multimedia big market guy. Toronto is a big market, but the couple of markets that he's talking about joining, possibly with the LeBron, with the Wade, a little bit bigger. And so I think that, you know, you look at the whole Chris Bosh situation and the summit really plays a small part.
And then when we look at if Chris Bosh goes, someone who might have softened his blow in leaving is Hidu Turkoglu, because the comments that he made with Turkish TV and all of this, I mean, this is just another headache that Brian Colangelo didn't need, right?
Absolutely. And considering the way the team finished off the year, out of the playoffs, you know, sort of limping to the end, definitely didn't already sit well for the next season coming up. Now you look at two of your main players, your two top, biggest, highest paid guns, basically looking for a way out of the door. You know, and a lot of people look at the midseason problem, his partying, his missing games and then going out to dinner. However that story went, they look at that and he's cited that as the reason for his discomfort, the source of his discomfort, and maybe the seed that grew into a tree. But really, the comments from him didn't come out until it became clear that Chris Bosh was leaning out of Toronto. And so I look at this more like a sort of, well, if the big guy's not staying, I don't want any part of this, because if he's not here, Turkoglu becomes the lightning rod. Turkoglu becomes the best player on this team. He's never been the focal point. I don't think he wants to be the focal point. I don't think this team wants him to be the focal point. And I think when you look at the fact that his comments were, you know, timed in unison, in sync with Chris Bosh's sort of percentage points going up in terms of him staying in this city, it definitely was bad timing, but I don't think there was going to be ever good timing for that decision. If the Raptors were trying to move him earlier, it's going to be a lot harder now to get something in return.
And then when you look at who is going to be left, I guess Andrea Bargnani becomes, by default, the best player left on this roster. And how do you think Andrea handles all of this? Because I've always not been impressed how Andrea plays when Chris isn't around. He doesn't seem to take that mantle and run with it.
Well, sometimes when a guy is expected to come back and is the resident star, it's hard for you to sort of find a comfort zone when you know that you're going to have to, you know, kick it back a notch when he returns. And I'm not saying that's an excuse. You're right. He hasn't always taken on the mantle of leadership in, you know, when guys have gone out or when it's been called upon. But at the same time, you know, I've always been a backer of Bargnani. I think he has the talent. I don't know if he's that number one guy, though. You look at, you know, the history of the Raptors. Say what you want about big stars leaving. There's always been somebody there to sort of fill in that void. Damon Stoudemire had Tracy McGrady. Tracy McGrady leaves, there's Carter. Carter leaves, there's Bosh. These guys have all been on the cusp of or have been all-stars. Now you look at the fact that if Bosh leaves, there is no all-star ready to take his place. As much as I like Andrea Bargnani's game, he hasn't elevated to that status yet. And it's very rare that you can get an all-star in return for an all-star that's leaving, particularly under these circumstances, if Bosch leaves, and I say if still, but if he leaves, and the chances is great that he will, there isn't that guy behind him to fill in the spot. And if you're looking for Andrea Bargnani to do that, then you're looking for more than just the incremental improvements that he's made over the last 4 years or so in the NBA. You're looking for a big jump. And whether or not they can surround him with guys to help facilitate that is something for Colangelo and his staff, who's already got a big summer ahead of them. But, you know, I like his game. I like some of the improvements he's made. I've said to much people's argument that he's probably the toughest player on this team. I still believe that, but it hasn't sort of matched up with his talent level yet. And you're really looking for a big jump from him this year if you're planning on him for being the guy.
Now, a group that stood out for me with this basketball team was the group that was nicknamed the Young Guns. Now, two of them are back for sure, I would think. DeMar DeRozan, obviously, on his rookie contract. And Sonny Weems, he's got that option. It's less than $1 million. The Raptors would be foolish not to pick that up. But what about Amir Johnson? Is he a guy who will be back with this team? And he's almost like that other free agent. Once Bosch has made his decision, that I think the Raptors have a decision to make about Amir.
Yeah, you know, he is that one guy that they're keeping on the back burner, not as a guy that in case of. I think he's clearly a guy they want to bring back, but they've got some bigger fish to fry first. You know, you call them the young guns, and Sonny Weems and DeMar DeRozan were interchangeable at that 2-3 or sort of coming off the bench. But you're right. I think when you talk about consistency and when you talk about sort of bringing a smile to your face when you think about the possibilities, even with the play of those two guys, I don't think any of them approached Amir Johnson in terms of his consistency and his value to this team off the bench. He's a young guy. Still a young guy that's improving. I think for him, there's the right coaches in place to bring him along. More offensive polish to his game might up his value a little bit. But right now, he'll come in reasonably. He won't be expensive to maintain. You can get him on a good 3-year contract at a reasonable amount of money. And he's a guy that doesn't make too much noise, and he's got a great attitude. The one thing I liked about Amir Johnson this past season was that his ability to adapt to different roles. He was good as a starter. He was short-minute starter. He was well off the bench. And, you know, he was very versatile in that one, in that four role, able to slide over to the five at times. So I think he's the perfect backup, particularly if Bosch leaves. Particularly if you're looking at Andrea Bargnani to sort of move back to that power forward spot somehow. You look at this draft, James, and there's a lot of big guys that are going to be coming into the NBA. And for the Raptors, you've got a good one in your midst, and you got to fight to keep that.
And then let's talk about the other two guys a little bit. If Bosch were to go, if Turkoglu were to go, is this something that they say, wow, here's an opportunity for me to make this my team for a guy like DeMar DeRozan, Sonny Weems?
I don't think DeMar or Sonny is there yet in terms of can this be my team. As much as I always said last year that, you know, DeMar DeRozan hasn't hurt this team for the most part, he didn't. But that was the one spot, the one position where they absolutely had to and didn't and still have to and might have an upgrade. That two spot needs dynamic play on both ends of the court. DeMar DeRozan has the potential to do that, but he's not there yet. Of course, we know he was supplanted in that starting lineup near the end of the season, probably by some people's account a little too late. But regardless of that, you look at the Sonny Weems, and you know, I see a little bit more upside in Weems now coming to the end of last season than I do in DeMar. And that's not a slight against DeMar. Those two are pretty close. They're pretty interchangeable when you talk about their skill set. But, you know, if you're looking and if these guys see an opportunity to make this their team this year, you know, as good as they played last year, they played big minutes and big roles for a team that didn't make the playoffs. And if you're going to hold, you know, the other players on the team accountable and sort of hold them up to task, you know, I know these guys are young, and for the essentially, especially for Weems, he's essentially was a rookie last year, even though it was the second year in the league. If you're looking at those guys to be the torchbearers, you're in big trouble. You need some bigger guns and bigger bodies, and if they're not showing and proving out of camp that they can hold down that 2-3 spot, you've definitely got to be on the look, because if you have playoff aspirations, you need some star power in that backcourt.
And then just quickly, the Raptors bring in PJ Carlissimo. What do you think of that move to add to the staff?
A solid move. I mean, everywhere he's gone, despite the success or lack of sometimes of his teams, they've always been defensive-minded, particularly in Portland, where he had his teams getting better defensively every year. In Golden State, it was the same deal. And even with Oklahoma, for the brief time that he was there, he installed some principles. And then, of course, playing under Popovich in San Antonio also helped to reinforce and to sort of refine his defensive philosophies. Of course, we know that him and Jay go way back in terms of their relationship. But PJ Carlissimo, you know, despite his, you know, dramas in the past with Latrell Sprewell and sort of the way he was let out of Seattle, you look at the way that he's come about in terms of being able to install defensive principles wherever he goes. You look at the Raptors, offense was never, has never, and will never be a problem with this team as constituted, which they might not be constituted this way for that long, but defense was definitely the sore point for this team, even with the little bit of improvement they made over 2008, 2009. PJ comes in here, and I suspect he'll get a great, great voice and a great chance to contribute to the defensive philosophies on this team, because with the staff and the guys they had in place, even with the presence of Ivoroni last year, it wasn't enough.
And then we briefly touched on the draft, and this roster is so much in flux. A, what do you think the Raptors do with their draft pick? And B, how much is the fact that this roster is in a total state of flux impact on what they do in the draft?
What do you mean by flux?
In the sense of you're not sure if Bosch is back.
Yeah.
You might be trading Hedo. There's even been talk. Might not have both point guards back. The Raptors roster is very fluid, I would say.
Yeah, fluid. You know, you're right in that sense. It is hard to plan around the draft when you've got so many in-house roster decisions still left to be made. You look at Turkoglu. You look at Bosch. You look at, you know, Calderon and Jack. That you mentioned, and yeah, there is some fluidity there, and there will be some moves made to sort of shore up. I fully expect that backcourt situation, point guard situation, to be cleared up with one of those guys on the move. I fully expect that Hedo will be shopped in a trade, and then, of course, you mentioned Bosch. Now, Bosch is the big ticket, obviously, and the big domino. As I mentioned before, this is a draft full of big guys, full of big men, and with that 13th overall pick, you probably aren't going to be able to latch on to some of the upper echelon guards that are in this draft. Obviously, Evan Turner and John Wall will be long gone, and there isn't that much in the way of big-time names for guards after that. You're looking at a lot of, you know, DeMarcus Cousins and guys like that, you know, Epke Udo and you know, who was just in town for training the other day. You know, it's a really hard gauge, and I think they've really got to look at the best player. They say, you know, never draft for position, but for the Raptors, it isn't about that this year. It really is drafting the best player who may or may not be able, they may or may not be able to move on in some sort of trade, some sort of a deal, a draft day deal. Because I think when you're talking about Turkoglu, when you're talking about Chris Bosh, these are players you want to deal with sooner rather than later. And if it's going to take a draft day deal to make it happen, then that's what you've got to do. And I think that's the best option to deal with any one of those situations. Point guard, three, or the four, you probably, in terms of looking at the draft, I don't know how much younger you want this team to get, how much more potential you want to play with on this roster. I think that any move the Raptors make, in my opinion, should include this coming pick.
Yeah, and so you would be of the opposite opinion then, that there, some people think they might go for another pick and kind of start a rebuild mode.
Well, you know, you look at what they have in place here, and you mentioned DeMar, you mentioned Sonny, you mentioned Amir. We joke last year on Media Row sometimes that, you know, they say they're not rebuilding, but, you know, there's so many young guys on this team, and I count Jarrett Jack is one of those young guys. There are so many young guys on this team that showed glimpses of hope that I don't know if you want to get any younger, particularly if you're going to move out your best players. I mean, you know, right now, as we speak, statistically speaking, over a period of time, not just last season, Hidu and Bosch are your best players. They're also your biggest money players. And if you're planning on moving out that kind of experience, and depending on which way you go in the point guard situation, you could be moving out more experience. I don't think you can sell this city, these fans, on another rebuilding process and a total roster makeover, which would be the third one in 3 years and probably the third philosophy in terms of rebuilding in the last 5 years. So I don't know how much of a good sell that'll be. To me, if you're looking at really challenging and getting back to the playoff, it's not going to be done through collecting more players in the draft. It's going to be done by flipping some of these malcontents into some real, real players and potentially all-star players. I will say this, you look across the NBA landscape, and you know, for much missteps that Brian Colangelo has done in the past couple of years, there aren't too many other GMs I'd want to have in this position than BC.
Yeah, he's really under the gun, though, and he's facing a lot of pressure. And I think, ultimately, I think you saw it at the end of last year with fans. There was kind of a frustration. I mean, the Raptors marketed the season as, you know, the 15th season and all of that. And I saw a lot of fans were like, yeah, what the heck has gone on in the last 15 years? I'm not exactly happy. Brian Colangelo's got a heck of a job in front of him this summer, no doubt.
Yeah, you know, he was great in his first year, and I think that set a lot of expectations, set him very high. You know, the way they went to the playoffs and they were able to, you know, garner the first division championship. And since then, it's been one plucked failure after another, really, and it sort of led them outside of the playoffs. And further to that, it's led them to the bottom ranks of the Eastern Conference. And so the gun is at his head and should be. I mean, he has made some very questionable decisions, and a lot of that has been based around his sort of reluctance to talk anything having to do with Andrea Bargnani. Now, I haven't faulted him because I've had sort of the same, I've seen the same potential for the kid. But at what point do you start, you know, moving out what's near and dear and seeing some sort of potential in other ways, fast-tracking it a bit? He's sort of in a new situation in that he hasn't always had the players and the success of the team to be able to translate that into some improved players and some higher stock players. He's drafted well enough, I think, and he's done well with small moves on the free agent market. But when you consider, you know, the Jermaine O'Neals, and when you consider the Hidu Turkoglu, these are big money guys that have translated into absolutely nothing for this squad. In fact, they've contributed to their downfall. And so I look at this as a very big summer for Brian Colangelo and his team. And if you know, if we're sitting here next year, James, talking about the same result, I don't think you're talking about the same GM being in place.
And maybe not the same coach as well. But, you know, it is going to be a busy, busy offseason. And your first appearance here in the Starting Five was a positive one. So hope to have you back again in the future. And thanks for this, Darren.
Thanks a lot, James.